Today's Taisho will be on Case 5 in the Mumonkan, the Umen Kwan. Case 5 is entitled Kyogen's Man Up in a Tree. Kyogen Osho said, "It is like a man in a tree hanging from a branch with his mouth. His hands grasp no bough. His feet rest on no limb. Someone appears under the tree and asks him, 'What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?' If he does not answer, he fails to respond to the question. If he does answer, he will lose his life. What would you do in such a situation?" Mumon's comment, "Even if your eloquence flows like a river, it is to no avail. Though you can expound the whole of Buddhist literature, it is of no use. If you solve this problem, you will give life to the way that has been dead until this moment and destroy the way of life that has been alive up until now. Otherwise, you must wait for Maitreya Buddha and ask him." Mumon's verse, "Kyogen is truly thoughtless. His vice and poison are endless. He stops up the mouths of the monks, and devil's eyes sprout from their bodies." So today is day 3 of our 2012 August Sesshin. We've had this wonderful, amazing weather. Usually October is August is the most difficult month to have Sesshin because it's so hot and sticky. We've had Sesshin here sometime where just sitting on the cushion and breathing made people break out in a sweat. So this is just extraordinary and wonderful, very propitious. This beautiful weather is here to help us with our sitting. Today we got up and came into a zendo, which was very different from the zendo yesterday. Yesterday the zendo was packed with people. And today we got up and there was half that number. And it had a very different feel, very different feel. Also, last night was a different experience than we usually have. On the second night of a sesshin, people have been together for 2 days, practicing in the camaraderie of Zen, enduring the same long sits, sweating together. And usually on day 2, people drift off to bed and collapse into sleep. But last night, about half of our numbers packed up and left. And it must have felt a little bit sad to see everybody go, you know. Usually the way our sesshin works is that people come little by little. Sometimes most people arrive at day 1, and then we get people in dribs and drabs until the weekend, and then we get a big contingent in the weekend. And, you might not think much of this, but there's a kind of collective energy that is part of the sesshin. And when you're sitting alongside other people and that number is large or it's growing, you can react to it, or you will react to it, even if you aren't consciously aware of it. So if crowds make you nervous, having lots of people in the zendo might make you a little tense, a little nervous. There are people who have a hard time with large groups. And sometimes they experience the sesshin atmosphere as as a nervous making. Usually such people don't come to Sesshin because it's just too stressful. But there used to be a person who would come to our Sesshin who would get very nervous with lots of people around. And he would come into the Dokusan room and say, "It's chaos out there in the Zendo." He said, "It's chaos." And after our Dokusan interview, I once came into the Zendo and took a look, and it was absolutely quiet and still. I think he meant that a couple people were moving during the sits, and maybe somebody was coughing or something, but he experienced it as very stressful. On the other hand, if you like crowds of people, having people arrive in the Sesshin can be exciting. It's subtle, but much of our life happens below the threshold of conscious awareness. And so even if you're not consciously aware of people coming and sort of swelling the ranks of practitioners, you may unconsciously become excited by it. It may unconsciously make you excited. This is really the nature of the human being, that we pick up on a lot of cues from our environment without even being consciously aware of it. And last night, people were leaving. And even without being consciously aware of it, you might have felt a little lack of, or a little loss of energy, a little loss of, you might have even felt a little bit of disappointment. This is subtle. You know, maybe you consciously noticed. You said, "Gee, they're leaving, you know, that makes me sad." Or you might have thought, "Gee, they're leaving, I wish I were going too." But on the other hand, you know, you might not have picked it up consciously. You might have just noticed, you know, when you came into a room with fewer people, that you felt a little low or a little down. There's something archetypal, actually, about what happened last night. People leaving, right, and you're staying, is like a kind of deep psychological event, even if we're not consciously aware of it. Because all of us have a fear, to varying degrees, of being left. I myself have quite a separation anxiety. It's possible that when my mother was, when I was a baby, she didn't come over and take care of me when I was crying. Maybe it was other things too. You know, my father was in the military, and we moved around a lot. We hardly ever lived anywhere more than a couple years. So I would make friends, and then I'd have to give him up. So I'd have a good friend, and then we'd move. And then I'd make some friends, and we'd move. And I would come into school in the middle of the school year sometime, and leave in the middle of the school year. So I lost a lot of friends growing up. That's part of it, too. And I suppose there were some other events in my life where maybe I felt like abandoned, you know, or alone in a bad way. And so you might think, well, he does a lot of zazen, but I actually have a strong reaction to events like what happened last night. It actually, on a subtle level, it affects me. And of course, I'm aware of it too, you know, consciously. But there's something archetypal about being with a group of people, being surrounded by all this energy, and then coming into like a dark room and you're alone. And nobody really wants that to happen to them. You know, that's an unpleasant experience. And if you have a kind of abandonment anxiety, that can really trigger a lot of anxiety. We all have these kinds of unacknowledged mental obstacles. Zen is really about working with them, you know. It would be nice if we could just come to Sesshin and groove on the beautiful stillness and also on the peace and quiet. And actually, please enjoy that, you know. But when you're sitting, things may come up, may be triggered by events like people leaving last night or other things too, you know. I remember going to a Sesshin a long time ago where I was supposed to work with this woman who was in charge of washing the dishes. And she was sort of like in command of me. And she was a very nervous person, I thought. And she was very fussy. And I started to do the dishes, and she said, "No, you're getting too much soap on the dishes." And her voice was very anxious. It was like she was super anxious, you know. And she said, "That's not how to rinse them, like this," you know. And it was, she was very stressed, you know. And, you know, I was sort of like a hippie in those days, you know. I, whatever, man, you know. But, you know, something was going on with her and those dishes, you know. She was, it wasn't just about dishes. There was something else going on with her. And anyway, we eventually had like a big fight. And the fight really bothered me. You know, it really troubled me. She was very, very bossy, and she was very critical. And I couldn't put it down for the rest of the sesshin, you know. And that sort of becomes a koan, right? I mean, what? You know, I could have just laughed and said, you know, okay, fine, more water on the dishes, you know. But I couldn't let it go. It was gripping me. There was something inside me that was definitely resonating with this, you know. And last night, people leaving also resonates, you know. Could some people, it doesn't matter. It's like they come, they go, fine, you know. That's great. But for some people, that kind of an event can really tug at your heartstrings. It can really tug at your heartstrings because, you know, we have this primal fear of being abandoned and being alone. And so, you know, when something bothers us, when it begins to elicit these strong emotions, we know we're encountering an obstacle, you know, in ourselves. It could be other things too, you know. Sometimes Zen training itself creates strong emotions. So, you know, having to work on a koan can create many, many powerful feelings of tension and stress. So, you know, I myself was a very good student in high school. I really wanted to be a good student, and I wasn't good at anything else. So I thought, if I can be good in school, I can be good at something. And I generally got like really good grades. In fact, you know, I was very, very careful to get excellent grades. And I got like straight A's in my last 3 years in high school, and I was the valedictorian of my high school. And when I went to undergraduate school, I was a little bit more relaxed, but I always was on the honor roll. I was always on the dean's list. And I, you know, got lots of awards. When I started doing Zen, you know, I took it very seriously, and I didn't pass my koans for a long time. And this was like getting failing marks. You know, this was like failing on a test. And it created a lot of negativity, a lot of anger and self-hatred, and a lot of negative feelings about myself. It's really remarkable I stayed with Zen, because it caused me a lot of stress, a lot of inner turmoil. But on the other hand, when I sat, I felt better, and it helped me deal with my anxieties. So I guess I stuck it out for that reason. But as we're practicing, you know, we gradually encounter things inside of ourselves that are obstacles or fears that are really deeply ingrained in our personalities. And it's possible to see these kinds of events as distractions from practice. You know, you might think that when we come to Sesshin, we're creating this Bodhimandala, this sacred space, and in it there is only wholeness, like my teacher's, I only wholeness know. And so, you know, you can come to Zen and you can enter Samadhi and you can feel the beauty all around you. And that's excellent. That's really important. That's a key element of Zen practice. Because when you're in that state, it renews your trust. It renews your elemental trust, that basic trusting consciousness. And so if we don't have that, we don't have anything to work with. So coming to Sesshin and going into Samadhi and feeling that deep connectedness is the foundation of Zen practice. That Samadhi experience is the experience of elemental trust. And this is really the foundation of the mind itself. We say one with the trusting mind. But when we're practicing Zen and we've entered trusting mind, we haven't really wakened up fully. We haven't solved the problem of our karmic obstacles. We still have lots of karmic obstacles to undo, even if we can enter this kind of paradise of oneness. And so once we have the foundation of, we say, Mushin, that unshakable connected mind of emptiness, you know, then part of koan training is to deal with these obstacles that are so hard for us to see. Usually people can't see their own obstacles simply by introspecting. Often the obstacles that are our biggest fears are so frightening we don't allow ourselves to look at them. We just act out of conditioned responses in a kind of compulsive way. So basically, you know, there are people who hate to be alone. And they absolutely do anything possible not to be alone. When they're alone, they don't necessarily consciously become aware of their soaring anxiety level. But, you know, people who have like an abandonment phobia or abandonment anxiety, I would say I'm in that category, can be very nervous when they're by themselves and their anxiety soars. And such people often, you know, make a point of being out in public every night, right? You'll meet people who go dancing one night, next night they do this, the next night they do this. You know, they're always visiting friends. And, you know, that's wonderful to be a social person, to go dancing, that's great. But, you know, sometimes you meet people who are like, it's almost, you know, they're just almost compulsive about it. And they probably are compulsive about it. Because simply being by themselves is very difficult, very anxiety-producing. So, you might not be aware of that consciously because when your anxiety arises, you run off and do something. Or people like that sometimes develop substance abuse problems. You know, when they feel anxious, they have a drink or a toka or something. And that takes the edge off, right? Last night when people were leaving, it might have produced like some anxiety or some sadness. And that's natural in a way. We all have this like primal fear of being abandoned. But that's, you know, that's actually a limitation, right? That's actually like a limitation. Because being alone is okay, actually. You know, in Buddhist tradition, there are many people who spend years by themselves. Now, sometimes people spend years by themselves because they have a phobia of people. You know, so they're avoiding people because it produces anxiety. So that's not good either, right? But there are, in Zen stories, tales of people who go up in the mountains and spend many years, even by themselves, doing zazen. And it's possible that they're doing this because they have a separation anxiety, and this is curing themselves from their separation anxiety. In other words, you know, we have these fears, and often we don't allow ourselves to see them. And we develop, you could say, bad habits in coping. You know, so if people make us anxious, we stay in all the time, and we never go out. And when we come to Sashin, we're in hell because we're surrounded by all these people and we can't get away from them. Or, you know, we have a fear of being alone, and we constantly try to do something so that we're not by ourselves. And anyway, both of these are like blockages or obstacles. You know, being around other people can be quite wonderful. Being in the presence of others and sharing in their life can make you feel expanded and alive, can make you feel open and connected. But actually, so can being alone. You know, so when we have a fear of people, or we have a fear of being alone, we develop a kind of closed mind. You know, we develop habits. And, you know, if you think about it, the human being, the individual, is almost like a collection of these habits. You know, so little by little we develop preferences, they're called in the Xin Xin Ming. Say, well, I'm just not a people person. You know, I tend to stay by myself. That's like a preference, right? And probably you've had embarrassing experiences or difficult experiences with other people, and you have kind of anxiety in the presence of other people, so you stay by yourself a lot. My mother was like that. You know, my mother had a lot of problems. My mother was really should have had therapy because she had lots of social anxieties. She grew up very, very poor and had a very poor education. And when she was around people who were rather middle class, she always felt this terrible sense of inferiority. And she was always feeling humiliated by sort of mistakes she'd make. So, if she said, the Mona Lisa is at the Louvre, you know, she might say, my mother had a copy of the Mona Lisa in her house. And she might have said, yes, that's from the Louvre Museum in France. And somebody would have laughed at her and said, no, no, Joyce, it's Louvre, right? Something like that. That kind of an error would have sent my mother into a tailspin, you know. And so as she got older, she stayed more and more away from people, trying to avoid those horrible experiences of anxiety and shame, you know. My father, on the other hand, was very, very much afraid of being alone. I remember once we were hiking in the mountains when I was just a little boy. And we were in the Boy Scouts, and I ate some blueberries, and I had this extraordinary allergic reaction. And my face swelled up and my hand swelled up. It looked like I was going to burst. And I was running a fever, so the scout troop went on to the next cabin, and I stayed in with my dad in this cabin, and we were by ourselves, and my father just went crazy. He chain smoked, he looked nervous and anxious, and my father couldn't stand to be alone. If he was alone, he'd start drinking. So these are very human responses, but they limit us, right? And so part of Zen practice is, the foundation of Zen practice is entering that deep samadhi connection. That feeling we get when we're in Mushin and we hear the wind and it feels like part of us, or in Mushin and you hear the rain and you just feel totally at home and at ease. That's the foundation of Zen practice, that trusting mind. But then, you know, another part of Zen practice is encountering these obstacles, you know. And that can be difficult. You know, koans often point us to an obstacle. So this koan is like another primal fear, right? It's almost like a dream. It's like a man up in a tree hanging from a branch with his mouth. His hands grasp no bough, his feet rest on no limbs. Someone appears under the tree and asks him, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? Now this is a crazy story, right? But it's meant to be very dreamlike. It's meant to be like an archetypal experience. You know, I mean, you might be able to think, well, he could talk out of the side of his mouth. You go left, you know. Or maybe he could get just a finger on the branch, you know, and quickly say something, you know. But that's not really in the spirit of the koan. This is like, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes I have dreams where I'm chased and I flap my arms and I can fly away. Does that ever happen to you? Oh, it's great. In my dream, I realize I have this secret power to fly. So people are chasing me and I fly up into the sky and I think, thank God I've got this secret power to fly. I don't know if you have that power or not in your dreams, but it's great. So anyway, we have these crazy dreams, right? And one of the dreams can be like trying to run and your feet get heavy. I don't know if you've ever had that dream, but you're trying to get away, but your feet are heavy. And as you run, they get heavier and heavier, you know. This is sort of a dream like that, where, you know, you're hanging from a bough by your teeth, and you have to speak. If you don't speak, you let this guy down. But if you do speak, you fall down into the pit, and you die, basically. So it's not just about, it's not just the conundrum of which should you do, but it's also about, we all feel this way sometimes in life. Like there's this undercurrent of insecurity. I feel like I could drop off into space. Any time now I'm going to drop off into space. You know, and also being trapped in a question we can't answer is a common human experience, right? So, you know, maybe you're looking forward to going on a summer vacation, but then your aunt calls you up and says, I've broken my leg, you need to stay here with me. And you've never really liked your aunt, and she's never really liked you, and she could hire somebody to take care of her because she has the money. And so you think, should I take care of my aunt, or should I go on my summer vacation? And it's a real question, right? Because she could get somebody. And you think, maybe she's just doing this to ruin my summer vacation, which is possible. Or maybe this is just another example of my aunt trying to control my life. Or you could say, gee, if I were really a selfless person, I'd go and take care of my aunt. Or you'd say, why do I always put others ahead of me? You know, sometimes I have to live my own life. See, so those kinds of dilemmas are also frightening. You know, because there's no right answer, and we just go around and around in a circle. You know. So this koan is really talking about like elemental fear, that elemental insecurity. See, that elemental insecurity. You're hanging over space and you could drop. You know, that's such a sickening feeling, and we've all felt it. It's another one of those moments like everybody leaving the Zendo last night and you're here. You know, it could produce very powerful resonance, right, inside you. A lot of anxiety, a lot of fear. We all have different kinds of fears. You know, so this koan could trigger something in you and something in me that's a little different. But the koan might trigger something inside you that is really definitely a raw. And, you know, it might be that, you are afraid of being abandoned. You know, I myself have, that's one of my karmic legacies. Is it fear of being abandoned? And so something like what happened last night was actually very good for me, you know? Because when it happens, you know, when you realize, oh my gosh, everybody's leaving, if you have a kind of anxiety phobia, I mean abandonment phobia, you know, that's very anxiety producing. Could cause a lot of distress. I like that word, distress. That's where, you know, there's a lot of tension in your body and you're building up a lot of fear or anxiety. So, you know, knowing people are going to leave could create a lot of distress for one, for a person, if you have a phobia. And basically, you know, as the event comes along, it can become more and more unbearable. You know, more and more unbearable. You know, basically, this is a good thing. Because, you know, the Zen, the whole point of koans is to, when we encounter something like that, we actually stay with it instead of running away or concealing it. So instead of if people are leaving, instead of getting in our car and driving over to the store or driving over to a bar, you know, hanging out with people or something, we have to stay. We sit on the cushion and there it is, you know, instead of thinking, you know, there it is, that fear, that anxiety. And it the more you come to terms with it, the more horrible it might become. And maybe you think about other times you've been abandoned or betrayed or left alone without anything to help you, no one to help you, no one coming to your aid. And it can feel very bad, you know, really bad. Zen is all about sitting with that, you know, sitting with that. And at times it might feel unbearable, like really unbearable. Like, I can't take this loneliness anymore. I can't take this anxiety anymore. But you keep coming back to your breath. You keep coming back to your breath. And the breath grounds you in that place of trust. So, you know, you keep coming back to your breath, and it's like, you know, if you have a separation anxiety, or you have like a separation phobia, you feel like if I go through the experience of separation, I will be destroyed. It will be the end of the world. See, and this is very deep, you know. It's like if I don't get a promotion, you know, you might be anxious about yourself, and you might think, you know, I'm no good. I must get a promotion, or I'm just a valueless person. And so you're hoping, you know, you do all this stuff to attract your boss's attention. And the more you do, the more desperate you become, because you feel unworthy in yourself. So you're working harder and harder to win the approval of your boss. And then finally, you know, the promotions are announced, and you didn't get a promotion. And this is like the worst possible thing that can happen, right? Because it just pushes you back into that horrible place where you don't want to be. You know, fortunately with Zazen, you know, we have a way of dealing with that. You know, we feel like if I don't get that promotion, it's the end of the world. It's going to kill me. You know, and in fact, people even kill themselves because of the anxiety just gets so unbearable. Or another way to put it is the fear is so unbearable that people kill themselves. Right? It's like I'm so desperate to be promoted. You know, desperate to be promoted, and then you don't get the promotion. You know, people can't sit with that, you know. But in Zen, we sit with that. We sit with that fear. And we keep coming back to this place of trust. And it's a process of back and forth, right? You're there with your fear, And then you're back to the place of trust. And then you're there with your fear, and then you're back to the place of trust. And little by little you realize you're not going to be destroyed by this, you know? And that's really a great feeling. That's really liberation. So, you know, you think, if everybody leaves, I'm going to be destroyed. It's going to be the end. And then everybody leaves and you sit with that pain. And then lo and behold, you realize, you know, everything is okay. Actually, things are pretty good. It's a beautiful morning. My body is at ease. You know, I'm feeling connected to things. It's not over yet, you know, I'm still alive. That process is very, very important to Zen practice. The process of confronting, you can't confront all your fears at once, but confronting a fear, something like that, we say karma, a karmic obstacle. And sitting with your pain, usually these things are incredibly painful because they have deep roots. They go back way, way back. And we don't even remember what caused them and probably never will. But, you know, we sit with our pain and after a while, you know, it begins to subside and we're back in this place of trust. And then we realize, I haven't been destroyed by this. You know, I haven't been destroyed. And this is really liberating, right? To know, oh, I can be alone. I can be alone. It's okay to be alone. I won't be destroyed by being alone. Or, I can be with people. I won't be destroyed by being with people. So this is a really deep healing. Once you have overcome the fear of being with people, and you can be with them comfortably, there's a door open now in yourself instead of closed. And now your world is bigger. And now, in fact, you're emptier, right? You're emptier. Same thing, if you're afraid of being alone, and you're alone and you realize you're not destroyed, that you still feel connected, there's still joy, there's still safety, then now the door that was closed is open and you can breathe freely. See? So now many of our obstacles we don't really see consciously. You know? We often don't become consciously aware throughout this whole process sometimes. But we do know that there's a building up of pressure and that there's an increasing level of anxiety and desperateness, and then suddenly something breaks and we feel open. You know, years ago I was working on this koan, and about halfway through the koan, I won't tell you what koan it is because I hope we have a chance to work on it together. But about halfway through the koan, I just got so goddamn mad at Zen. You know, I was working on this koan all of a sudden I just felt, I had been practicing Zen for about 5 years and I'd had many beautiful experiences. And I had finally passed the Mu koan. And then I was working on this other koan. The teacher had given me this koan after Mu. And I was working on this koan, I was sitting in the zendo, and I just got so mad. I felt like, this goddamn Zen is a fraud, you know. I was so mad. Furious, you know. And I went in to see my teacher, and I said, this is a bunch of bullshit. This is a fraud, you know, a fraud. You know. And then he listened and rang the bell, and I went out. And I didn't leave. But I was so mad, you know. And then after a while, it all went away. And I went in and I answered the koan, you know. And it was great, you know. Great, had a nice time. And that's some obstacle I never really understood what the obstacle was, but that's like a classic, you know. There was some fear that koan was eliciting. I mean, I now understand it, but at the time I didn't know. This is really touching some raw nerve in me. And I was just hopping mad. I felt so cheated by this koan. You know, the answer, I kind of knew the answer, and the answer just pissed me off. You know, so mad. And I went, this is a fraud, you know. And Genki Roshi was such a good teacher, he didn't go, fraud, get out of here, you know. He understood that I was working through something in myself. So he didn't say anything, he just rang the bell. And I went back to the cushion, and then the answer seemed obvious to me. Okay, fine, you know, I can live with that. I'm not destroyed, you know. It didn't destroy me. This is what Seng Tsan, our great ancestor, means when he talks about, you know, one with the trusting mind. You know, we recite those verses on the heart mind every morning at Sesshin. And I love those verses. Seng Tsan was one of the founders of Zen in China. And he actually died of leprosy. He had this terrible progressive disease. I always think about him writing the Shinshin Ming with bandages on his hands, you know, as his fingers fell off. Really, I mean, that's what used to happen to people who had left. Now it's you just take some antibiotics. But in those days, it was a terrible, terrible disease. And people went through this terrible process of deformation. And here's this man with this horrible disease writing, you know, trust in mind, trust. You know, I mean, you can imagine what he must have gone through, you know. I'm sure that it wasn't effortless for him to have leprosy. Must have had many days when he sat on the cushion and just thought, I hate this life. You know, or this is so unfair, just furious. So unfair. Think of all the, I have done so much good in my life. I have helped so many people. I have been flawless in my behavior. Now I have leprosy. This is so wrong. You know, but at some point, you know, he cleared through that obstacle and then just writing, you know, to set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. And that's extraordinary, and extraordinary. That's real spiritual greatness, right? To be able to have trust under those circumstances, to work through that, is pretty amazing. So, you know, day two of Sesshin, usually people begin to enter trusting mind, begin to get to this place where they feel, even though their legs hurt, in fact, sometimes that's what it takes to get there, you know, deep, deep connectedness, deep, still, empty mind. You know, this morning we had three sits in a row, people sat so beautifully. And just before this Taisho, we had a 45-minute sit. And nobody moved. It's like you could have literally dropped a pin in the Zendo. It was so quiet. That's really deep practice. And now, you know, inside ourselves could be very still, very open, but there may be some fire burning inside, you know. And you know, something is breaking our heart, something is pulling at our heartstrings. Something is turning us into a bonfire of anger, you know. And that's a good thing. When we become aware of these obstacles, that's really good, you know. When something, you know, you can get trapped in samadhi, you know, beautiful. You know, the whole point of koans is to sort of rub sand in your eye a little bit, right? You know, the point of koans is to help you find your inner obstacles. You know, some koans don't really resonate with people, but some, when people are having a hard time answering their koan, that usually means it's touching on a nerve somehow. There's something going on there, you know. And so all koans take a little while to internalize. It takes one or two sesshin to really soak up a koan, usually. But then, you know, sometimes it's psychodynamic. It's working at a subconscious level. And sometimes when we're really blocked and we feel blocked, there's something we don't want to see inside ourselves, you know. So, you know, basically you should enjoy deep connectedness if you're there. And if your koan is asking you to look at something, koan probably doesn't make any sense intellectually. But if you begin to feel mad or you begin to feel blocked or helpless or et cetera, et cetera, then some good work is happening. Something important is happening. We can't solve all our problems at once. Generally, one koan at a time is enough. But if you come to sesshin too and something's bugging you, that's really great. You know, you get into samadhi and there it is, it's staring at you. You didn't get the promotion. You know, something like that. Or if you come to sesshin and you're torn by a dilemma, go or stay, you know, that's perfect. And you just keep sitting with that pain, that difficulty, until something resolves itself. And then you're open. You've got an open door. And you're not so scared next time. Our big phobias, our big ones, take a lot of sitting. You know, you can work it through many times, and it still triggers certain reactions. But every time you work it through, you're a little bit more free. You know, it's like, the metaphor in Zen is like pebbles in a bag. You know, in the old days, they used to take a bunch of stones and put them together in a bag and just pound the bag, like on sand. And little by little, the stones would all wear away each other's imperfections, and you get all these smooth, polished stones. I don't know if this really works, you know, this could be just baloney, but, you know, basically, Zen practice is a little bit like that. You know, we're gradually wearing away all the edges, you know. And by the way, sesshin is good because we're doing it together. You know, sometimes somebody at sesshin really bugs you. That's a perfect training situation, right? So if somebody across the way is breathing too hard, you know, you have no idea how many times I hear that complaint. People come into Dokusan and go, "Oh my God, can you hear that?" Like, first of all, I can hardly hear anything myself. I just had my ears checked and I'm losing my upper register, but not bad enough for a hearing aid, I'm told. But you know, people come into Dokusan and go, "Oh my God, this guy's breathing, it's driving me crazy." And probably, I know some of the people in the Zendo do breathe heavily, you know, and I've actually said, please don't breathe so heavily, you know. But that kind of a situation is really actually good. And, you know, if you go into deep mushin and you think, that guy, he always breathes so heavily. I hate that guy, you know, whatever. You know, by the end of sesshin, it's like, oh, I love that guy. He breathes so heavily. I love the sound of his breath. It's so comforting. That's perfect. That's perfect. So, everybody's really sitting deeply, doing an excellent job. You know, when something bothers you, like loneliness, you know, that's actually very productive. Use that to deepen your mind. You know, if you're with somebody who annoys you, use that to deepen your mind. You know, all of these things are like tools to liberate ourselves. So please use your tools to liberate yourself in this precious. Sesshin is the most precious opportunity You have no idea how many people told me, wish I could stay. A couple people stayed and did dishes last night, even stayed this morning for breakfast because they didn't want to go. Their jobs required them to go. At least half the people who were here said, I wish I could stay next time, etc. So being able to come to Sesshin is really this precious opportunity. We all have to work. We all have many, many obligations. To be able to do this is really rare in the world. So please continue to practice with diligence.